Well, good morning and welcome to Consider This Program. I'm Joe Clark, your host.
And I'm Angie Kinzer. I'm generally the first person you're going to talk to if you decide to call in and schedule an appointment with one of our advisors.
If you're new to Consider This Program, here's the deal. We're registered investment advisors. I'm a certified financial planner by trade, ended up teaching at Purdue University for 7 years as an adjunct professor teaching the capstone course for financial planning. And our objective on this show is to help people understand their money a little bit better. Mm-hmm. We do our best to eliminate and reduce financial regrets. We take care of people who don't want to worry about their money so that you don't make inefficient financial decisions that lead to frustration and devastation. We are, by definition, fiduciaries. So we're obligated to treat your money as if it were our money and we were in the same situation. What we're going to do in this show today is to break down some of the financial issues that are out there that just naturally go through life, what we like to call the good, the bad, and the ugly. So what are our big conversations this morning that we're starting with, Angie?
Well, it is graduation season, so we want to talk a little bit about that and maybe what are some first jobs, maybe what are some things you could ask employers, and ultimately, how do you get saving early?
Yeah, and those are, you know, they're disciplines. They're good questions. We will walk through that. It is the month of May, so many people would say it's the racing season, not the graduation season. With you having a junior in high school, yes, you're still full of those graduations.
I got a bunch of them in the mail, and I'm ready. And I know it's race season here in Indiana, but I think everywhere it's graduation season.
Yeah, it's true. My son-in-law had his graduation last Saturday. I graduated from Anderson University and is excited to have his first job. So, you know, instead of sitting down and talking with him some more about this, I guess we'll just have him listen to the radio show.
Okay. Maybe he can call in. He can be our caller.
There you go. If you've got a question or comment, something that you want to know or hear, Angie and I, and typically Ken Dilger is with us. Typically, we can sit down and talk about it, kind of hash it through here on the radio. We're always happy to answer your questions. We change your name to protect the innocent.
Yes.
But we often talk about the situations because if it matters to you, it probably matters to somebody else. So you can go to our website at yourlifeafterwork.com to find more information, to sign up for our Market Carver, to submit a question, or to get a hold of Angie, where she's more than happy to answer your questions about things that are going on in the world in terms of how we work with people. So we'll take a break. We'll get right back in the show. Again, it's yourlifeafterwork.com. Very, very happy to hear from you. 800-928-4001. We'll be right back.
Hi, Joni Michaels here. We know you care about your money, but are you tired of worrying about it? The Financial Enhancement Group takes care of people just like you who don't want to worry about their money. As fiduciaries, the team at the Financial Enhancement Group will care for your nest egg just like they would care for their own. If they were in your situation, there are many decisions you'll need to make as you face retirement, and the team at the Financial Enhancement Group is here to help you. Call 800-928-4001 or go to yourlifeafterwork.com to set up a time to meet. The confusion and complexity of retirement is almost as daunting as is the excitement of retirement. Don't let your fear and frustration of taxes and investing derail your retirement. Call the Financial Enhancement Group at 800-928-4001. They'll give you a complimentary second opinion on your strategy for retirement. Begin your adventure in your life after work. Call 800-928-4001 or yourlifeafterwork.com. Now back to Consider This Program with Joe Clark.
Hi, I'm Joe Clark, your host of Consider This Program.
And I'm Angie Kinzer.
Happy to have you along, Angie. Hey, we are in the midst, they tell me, of graduation season.
Yes.
And so Angie has got some questions, some things that we're going to work through. Some of them came from things that you folks as listeners submitted. Don't forget, you can always do that. Go to our website at yourlifeafterwork.com and type that, type in your question. We will change your names, but more than happy to have those questions. So, Angie, fire away.
Well, one thing that I did come across, and that's before we even got a question in, and looking at some statistics for college graduates. And what we've found is there are a lot more high school kids going to college, but there are also, I think, only 1 in 5 graduate from college. And then they're saying only 40%, and this is the Department
of... So anytime I hear statistics like
Bureau
that...
Bureau of
Labor Statistics. Okay, so it's
yes.
So that's a government organization, and they're saying only one out of five now are completing?
Are completing, yes. And that's because the number has moved up so much in how many are going. It's kind of a forced thing. I mean, everyone goes to college. That's just what you do. And sometimes these kids don't have a minute to think about what they want to take. You get there, you kind of get covered up, and it's not what you want to do.
Right. It's the last data that I saw, because this is the one that concerns me the most, both as an adjunct professor at Purdue and, you know, just from being in the industry. The last number that we saw was only 43% of kids were using their major in their workforce. And that kind of goes to a statistic we have on an economic condition right now. In the United States, and this is just, this is as accurate as of the end of March 31st of 19, we had 7.8 million jobs across the country that were open,
mm-hmm.
but we only have 6.5 million unemployed Americans, right? So we have more job openings than we do people, and it really gets into the skill set.
Yes.
You know, what we need people to do is not what people either want to do or are capable of doing, which is why I've told people plumbing and electrical and welding.
That's right. The skilled trades are in so much need right now. I do have a list of what the top five paying jobs in the United States were in 2018.
For first jobs, correct?
No. These are just jobs in general.
Oh.
Top jobs. And so number one was physician. Number two, pharmacy manager. Number three, pharmacist. Number four, enterprise architect. And lastly was a corporate counsel.
So I would say those are on averages then. That's the only way they could possibly come up with those numbers. The average income across the board, it's surprising, you know, in my generation, I'm 52. And, you know, when we were graduating from high school, everybody thought they wanted to be attorneys.
Yes.
You were going to go to law school.
Yes.
Everybody thought that was the big deal. Notice that's not anywhere near the top five. It is healthcare, building things, redesigning the way companies work in terms of their physical space. That's if you're a podcast junkie, obviously I have my own podcast, but I also listen to a lot of others, you know, how they're designing it. So the architecture part is in there. And then when you get to the attorney part, the lead counsel for a corporation is entirely different than the guy who does your wills and your trust,
right?
You know, that's on the street corner. But it certainly does matter in this world. So what else would you like to know about graduation season? You know,
well,
from that?
If we're talking about first jobs, I think one of the most important things, you know, these kids need to know, or young adults need to know, is what kind of questions would you ask a potential employer, especially about your retirement plan or savings that you can start?
So when you ask the question, when you go in, you want to find out if the company actually has benefits at all. So I guess we're now dealing with people that are college graduates, if everybody in graduation is going to college, right? But it's a different kind of graduation. But you want to ask that question about what benefits are offered. And specifically, what you're looking for is how healthcare is covered, because it's a major line item expense. And many changes occurred with the Obama program a few years back. It's a challenging thing for a company our size. We have 28 people on our team. We offer health insurance. There are some people that would qualify for what we call Obamacare, the Affordable Health Care Act, that can't get it because we offer insurance, right? So you really do want to know what those benefits are in terms of healthcare. It's a huge line item expense for a young family. And then the second part of that you want to pay attention to is retirement. I think we're going to go into that conversation in the next segment. But the earlier you start, the better off that you're going to be. And I think that just makes common sense. What happens, though, is people don't understand how staggering that difference can be. So when you have a 401k plan, what you're going to ask is how soon are you eligible to contribute? And most places are going to tell you 90 days. And then they're going to give you a percentage of how much you can put in that they will match, right? So there are some 401k plans, not many anymore, that don't put any money in. It just lets you put money in. So you don't get a match. A match is equal to free money. So rule number one, always take free money, right? So for instance, a 401k plan may say if you save 6% of your income, that they will put in another 3%. In other words, they'll match 50 cents to every dollar that you save up to up to a certain amount, up to 6% of your income. Now, when they put money in, it has to go into what's called tax deferred account, meaning that you're not paying taxes on it today. The troubling part of that is when you're younger, you may not even be obligated to pay federal taxes at the end of the day. They will withhold it out of your paycheck, Angie, but at the same time, they may very well return it at the end of next April when you file your taxes and you get a refund. So many times you're deferring taxes that you're not really paying you wouldn't have been paying taxes on at all. And hopefully over your career, you've got more money that you're going to have a higher income where you would pay taxes. So one of the questions that I asked my son-in-law when he went and got his first real big boy job, as we called it, is do they have a Roth 401k option, right? Remember, not all companies have that Roth option. Now, would I take a job or not take a job over the 401k plan and over health insurance? It really depends how big the difference is. If somebody's paying me $10 an hour at either place, and one's got a retirement plan and one doesn't, and one's got health and care benefits and one doesn't, yes, it's going to make that big of a difference. If somebody's going to pay me $15 an hour versus 10, and the $15 an hour job doesn't have benefits, I don't know. I think you really have to look inside of your situation in terms of where you are. The other questions that you want to ask, which, you're very familiar with, is, what's the time off policy? How does that work? Right? Because we all have life, we all have challenges, we all have opportunities and benefits. And I think what you're finding is more and more employers are letting people have more freedom. You can do that more in a services industry. When you tell me you need to go somewhere, to take Ava to the airport, you can do that, right? Whereas when you're in a manufacturing plant, you've got people that are working and everybody's got to be there side by side. It's just not quite so simple. But to all of you who have graduated or getting ready to graduate, congratulations. I wish you a wonderful life. Remember, save early, save often. We're going to talk a little bit about that in the next conversation. If you got a question or comment, you can go to our website, yourlifeafterwork.com. More than happy to hear from you. Or give us a call at 800-928-4001. Angie and I will be right back. Welcome to Consider This Program. I'm Joe Clark, your host.
And I'm Angie Kinzer. I'm normally the first person you talk to if you decide to call in and come in and see us.
Well, wonderful. Happy to have you along, Angie. It is graduation season in Indiana and across to the country. I guess it's racing season in Indiana, graduation everywhere else.
Everywhere else, yes.
All right, so where are we heading in here into conversation number two?
Well, we really kind of want to go back, and since we're talking about savings and trying to get started early with your first job. And really, we're talking about some Roth here, and we were talking...
Why do we want to start early?
Well, mainly because of compounded interest and how the sooner you start, the more you're going to have at the end.
How's come?
Because you will have more to grow if you start earlier and have a bigger base.
There was this dude named Albert Einstein.
Yeah.
He had that wacky hair. I wasn't there on his deathbed, not quite that old, but allegedly he said, I'm not sure what the seventh wonder of the world or the seven wonders of the world are, but the eighth is clearly compound interest. And it is staggering.
Yes.
When you look at how much money you can save over 5 years, so from 20 to 25, and then not add anymore versus starting at 25 and saving all the way to 60. How close the two are together. I mean, you want to save as early and often as you possibly can. But that compounding, people miss this all of the time. One of the questions when I taught at Purdue.
Yes.
One of the questions was, if you had a CD and the annual percentage return, APR, if you will, was 4%, how much would you have at the end of a year? And some of the kids thought 16%, thinking they got 4% a quarter. No, mm-hmm. It doesn't work that way, mm-hmm. Right? You get 1% each quarter. If your CD paid 4%, you got 1% in that first quarter. But next quarter, you got 1% on the four plus the interest from the first quarter. That's what compounding is. So most investments actually compound annually. Some bank things tend to do the compounding quarterly, but it's your effective compounding rate is critical over a long-term period of time.
It is, and when we have our thirdly dinners for the FEG family here, and we invite all of you to come, Adam gave a great example of something that Benjamin Franklin did for two cities.
Philadelphia and Boston. Back in 1790, Franklin is one of my favorite historian people because he did so many different things in life. He actually gave $1,000 both to the city of Philadelphia and to the city of Boston. And it wasn't allowed to be used for 200 years. Now, in truth, there was money that was allowed to come out after 100 years, but the rest of it was not to come out in for 200 years.
Okay.
But the point is, one city wound up with substantially more. One was $4 million in the 1990, and one was like $2.3 million in 1990. So almost a 50% difference. And Adam, being a CFA, and as he would say, a geek, I have a lot of those geeks in my life, so yes, it didn't surprise me at all, ran the numbers. And you would think if something was doubled over 200 years that the average annual return would have to be significantly different. And the truth was it was about 30 basis points. It was like 3.8%.
Yeah, not much at all.
3.8% to 4.1 or 4.3, something like that. And that's from memory, I apologize. But it is a staggering thing for people to see, to understand how much that really, really, really matters.
Yes, yes. So I guess one of the questions we have is, how would you get in the habit of saving money? I mean, if you're not a person that saves, how can you get in the habit of just being a saver?
It is a commitment and a discipline. So Andy Stanley is one of my favorite speakers, if you will. He's a pastor. But his little filter, if you will, of how he looks at life and making wise decisions, he'll say things like this: based on your past experiences, your current circumstances, and your future hopes and desires, what would be wise for you to do right now, right? And if you want to have retirement, if you want to have a better life, then what would be wise for you to right now is to begin to save money. But it has to become a habit. One of my friends, and I'm not saying you have to start there. I'm not saying that this is, you know, your life. You get to do it the way you want to. But he lives in a quarter, 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 quarter. So every dollar that he gets, 25% goes into the tax pot. So when it's time to pay taxes, he doesn't have to panic, doesn't feel guilty, or frustrated because he's having to try to find the money. 25% goes into his charitable causes that he fully supports. 25% goes into savings, and he and his wife live on the other 25%. So if he wants a raise, he's got to make his company do better, so that his 25% that they can use to, you know, buy a home or cars or go on nice vacations or eat out, he has to arrange it, you know, that way. But it becomes a discipline and a habit. And I've heard a lot of people say in life, Angie, you've got to pay yourself first, right? I totally subscribe to that theory. You know, if you pay no attention to your money, at the end of the day, somebody will ask for it all. Right. I mean, if you do not make that retirement a compelling discipline and a habit, you will be in trouble. And so, you know, Angie, we won't talk about Angie's income, but let's pretend you're getting your first job and you're making $10 an hour.
Okay.
And I tell you need to save 10%. And you go, oh, Joe, how can I save 10%? And I would say, well, Angie, would you take the job for $9 an hour?
Okay.
Right? You know, you've got a daughter, you've got all sorts of stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, fortunately at the Financial Enhancement Group, we've been blessed. We grew in 2008. We didn't have to lay anybody off because we run those financial disciplines and metrics. But, I mean, here's the bottom line. If the company did fall on tough times, and I said, Angie, I can either lay you off or we can go down to $8 an hour.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll take the $8 an hour.
You think you figure out how to do the $8 an hour,
yes,
right? So it's a mindset. If you pay yourself first, if you take that dollar and say, hey, the first thing that's happening is this is going for my future. No different than a lot of my friends do in church. That first dollar is going to the church.
Right.
Right. You know, it is simply a mindset of here's how we're going to operate our lives and go in that
direction. And that discipline's probably the earlier the better that you start. I know that in our kids club program that we have here at Financial Enhancement Group, it's kind of a little birthday club that we send out to the children or beneficiaries of the family who are here. One of the things we have is an educational piece that comes in with the fun little birthday card. And I remember that one of the programs is called Save, Spend, and Give Away. And it had the little piggy banks and gave you kind of an idea of how much should you save, how much should you spend, and how much should you give away. And it actually was to where the kids could set up a little jar at home and just start getting used to doing that.
Yeah, that's what a wonderful program. And I think the real problem is when you get – if you have access to all of your money, you will spend all of your money.
Right.
If you're most people, you've got to build that discipline. And the earlier you can build it, the better off you're going to be. But just think about it in compartmentalizing. You don't have to give away 25%. You don't have to. You may not be at a 25% tax rate. And you may say, Joe, it takes 70% of what I have today to live. Well, make it a goal to work toward. But start saving, whether it is small or large or mighty. Start saving as soon as you possibly can. We all have rainy days. They will come. Hey, you're listening to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark, along with Angie Kinzer. You got a question or comment, shoot us an email. Consider this at yourlifeafterwork.com, 800-928-4001. We'll take a break and be right back. Welcome to Consider This program. I'm Joe Clark, your host.
And I'm Angie Kinzer. I'm normally the first person you talk to when you call in to schedule an appointment.
And we're happy to have you do that. If you want to do this on your own, that's your business. If you're looking for a fiduciary, that is our business. Angie, a question that I get asked every year at this time, it's graduation season.
Yes.
And so the question is almost always is, can I put money into a retirement plan or an IRA for my grandchild or my child?
Right.
And the answer is?
I think if we're talking about Roth money, because it can't be a regular IRA if the child isn't working yet.
Can't be a Roth either if they're not working.
Right. So that has to be earned income.
That's the first question is, do they have earned income? So hear me on this, folks, because this is an important thing. And I'm going to share some of the Clark planning strategy with you that I've used in my own life. I have two daughters. One is married. One is not. Okay. Now, in my 31 years of experience of raising probably more than 1,000 kids, right? But the families that I've worked with have shared with me that what's worked, what's not worked, some of the strategies I came up with, many of them, in all fairness, they taught me, right?
Right.
Because I've seen what's worked and what didn't work. And in my experience, when kids have to pay for a wedding, they spend less than when mom and dad pays for the wedding. Right.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they are more willing to liberate your money than they are to liberate their own.
Right.
I find that to be be fascinatingly accurate. Right. So here's the deal with a Roth IRA. If you are under 50, and most of our kids are, if you're listening to this program, you can actually put up to $6,000 per year into a Roth IRA. Now, again, their income can't be too high, but for most people, that's not a big deal. So you've got a 16-year-old or you've got an 18-year-old that's graduating from high school, and they've got a job, and they make $3,000 a year. You can give them $3,000 to put into a Roth IRA.
Okay.
Right? Now, it's their money. They can get it out for any reason they want, right? But here's the deal. Many of you who are listening to this have high six, seven-figure retirement accounts that you know your kids are going to inherit. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons we have the beneficiary program at the Financial Enhancement Group. So this is our commitment. You know, if you come in and become one of our families, we let your kids have the same fee structure that you have so that they can learn to do things right from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a family in Lafayette, Indiana that the kid, the son is deceased, so they have two grandchildren, and there's a little over $1 million that's going to go to each of those grandchildren. And I look at my friend, we'll call him Gary, and I say, Gary, do you really want these boys to inherit $1 million in their mid-20s if something happened to you today with no experience? Or would you rather bring them into the office, let's give them $10,000 and let them start learning about how investing works, how, you know, the questions that you ask me when you come in, you know, the questions we ask the attorney when he's in here. When we know somebody is going to receive that, why not start early to get that done? And he goes, you would do that, Joe? And it's like, yeah, we have people who do that for you. It's not necessarily a 52-year-old business owner who's sitting down with your 24-year-old kid, because they may or may not relate to me. But what they will relate to is Grant, you know, one of our younger advisors that's out there, that he's more than happy to sit down and educate. Grant's who sees my daughters, right, when they come in. So the bottom line is, when you contribute money to an IRA or a Roth IRA, you have to have earned income, but it doesn't have to be that income, right? So I can give Angie, if Angie has earned income, I can make a gift to her of cash, and she can choose to put it in a Roth IRA if she qualifies all the other ways. So back to the Clark family strategy, I give my daughters money every Christmas Eve at Christmas to put into their Roth IRA. Whatever they can add to it, I will add to it again the following year. I kind of created a matching 401k. Sometimes they can, sometimes they can't. If they don't have an earned income, it doesn't work. But if they do have earned income, this is great. Now, why do I do that? Well, the deal I gave my wife was, listen, we're going to put money into their account. And if they want to buy reasonable wedding dresses, that's Joe standards, right? Yeah. If they want to buy reasonable wedding dresses, we'll go ahead and pay the bill. But if they want to buy something outlandish, it's coming out of an account that already has their name on it. Because remember, in a Roth IRA, you can always get your contributions back, right? And this gets so overlooked. People don't think about it. But I think we have a stewardship responsibility when we're leaving behind large sums of money. And because of defined contribution plans, because people who save the money don't end up using the money, it's very hard for me to imagine that we're just going to hand this money over to people of any age who have no experience with it and say, all right, you've gone from broke to booming, right? And you did it overnight because mom and dad are dead, right? You've lost your mentors, you've lost your parents. Congratulations, here's a check. I wonder why there are Ferraris that go around 465 in Indianapolis, because it's generally not the person who made the money who's driving the Ferrari, right? So that's what I would give you on the Roth part, Angie.
Well, I know that we've had the question several times, and that is, can you leave money to a child or a grandchild that's for something specific, like education or a wedding?
You can name. It's easier to say, this is what I want you to use the money for, than it is to actually control that that's what happened.
Okay.
Right? Once I have made the gift to you, I can say, Angie, if you ever want more, you darn well better use this to pay off the credit card. But I really can't control that you're not taking the money and going to Vegas. Right?
Right.
Inside of a trust, if you want to take the time to put together a document that is a trust, and you've got a trustee other than the beneficiary that can say, hey, you can only use this money for this. Like, they only write checks to universities, or they only write checks to doctors, or they only write checks to make down payments for homes, right? You can do that via a trust document that gives you a little bit more control. But when, annually, you can give $15,000 to anybody you want to, right? That's the number now. But by definition, in order for that gift to be what's called an annual exclusion, the gift has to have no strings attached.
Right.
In other words, I can't tell you what you have to do with it. Right. And that bothers some people. Mm-hmm. Right. But
so, are there certain things that should go into a trust versus what should go into a will? Like, for instance, how about a family heirloom? And diamond necklaces.
If you're going to do a trust, and please pay attention, I'm not an attorney. just done this for a long, long time, and I have my own trust, right? So when you have property that's not deeded or titled or what we call real property, you really have a letter that says, hey, here's where I want it to go, right? Mine are in my trust, right? There's not very many things because I'm not an antiquey, right? But it says, you know, if this is still left, here's who I want to get it at the time. So,
well, and there's some gray areas too when you think about like a family pet.
Yeah. Oh, my first trust was over a schnoodle or schnauzer, something like that. Kokomo, Indiana, 1988, January. I couldn't believe it. $700,000 for a dog. That dog will never, ever die. I might give you a little bit more when we come back. Hey, 800-928-4001. You're listening to Consider This Program. I'm Joe Clark along with Angie Kinzer. We'll take a break and be right back. Welcome back to Consider This Program. I'm Joe Clark, your host.
And I'm Angie Kinzer.
We are happy to have you along. Hope you've enjoyed the program. Here we are, Angie, in what we call the fifth conversation of the day.
Yes.
And what we just really want to do is kind of give you an overview of what you learned. And so it's my way of making sure that you're getting useful stuff out of the program. I do not have any intentions of talking at you. What I'm trying to do is to make sure as you're driving down the road that you're getting something that's meaningful and useful. So it's graduation season across the country. So the first conversation that we had, Angie, was over graduation gifts, but it was also over what to ask your boss.
Yeah, for those out there getting their very first job, what are some good questions to ask? And I know we talked about the benefits. Mm-hmm. And whether maybe they have a Roth option. We also talked about some of the normal things you would ask an employer, like what are your policies for vacation days or being able to do personal things.
So I left off a big one, and I apologize. So I hope you got them all. When I taught at Purdue, I was there from 2008, I think, until 2015. So 7 years, 14 semesters. A lot of people who go into the financial services industry sell things. They sell like life insurance or annuities and things like that, and they're deemed self-employed individuals. So when nobody at the, we don't sell products to the Financial Enhancement Group. So everybody here gets a W-2. And that means that the company pays half of Angie's Social Security. She pays the other half. Well, that's 7.65% on both sides of what she makes. This year, I think it's up to like $127,000, maybe a little bit more. So we're the Financial Enhancement Group's obligated for 7.65% of that, right?
Okay.
And when you're talking, you know, $9,000-$10,000 worth of this is what it costs to have an employee. Well, the newsflash: if you're self-employed, or what people will say is 1099 income, you're actually responsible for both sides of the 7.65%. So The first time I got in trouble with the IRS was not because, and it was 1991, it wasn't because I owed any taxes at the marginal rate, right? We still had more expenses than we had income. You still owe the Social Security income. Mm-hmm. And younger people do not understand that. So a big question is, am I W-2 or am I a 1099 employee? The IRS and Department of Labor have really, really cracked down on people trying to get away with calling people 1099 employees for that very reason.
Okay.
I mean, it's a big deal. But that's another thing you certainly want to another question you certainly want to ask. The second question then, Angie, was can you give a Roth IRA to a grandchild or a child?
And I guess it depends on if they have earned income.
That's correct.
Yes.
So up to age 50 here in 2019, how much could they put into a Roth IRA if they had income?
$5,000.
$6,000,
yes.
You know, $6,000. Because me being over 50, not saying Angie is or not, we just graduated the same year. us being over 50 can actually put in $7,000 this year, right? So we're seniors with our AARP cards that I sent mine back in the mail.
I didn't even open mine.
Yeah. Barb said, are you kidding? All the coupons that are in there? Of course, you know, it's fine, honey. You can keep yours. I am not a proud bearing AARP member, but I am happy to put $7,000 a year into a backdoor Roth IRA strategy. But the moral of the story is you can give your kids and grandkids money. You can request that it go to a Roth IRA, but you cannot force them to do that if you want to use it as part of the annual exclusion. They can contribute, assuming they had earned income that had Social Security taxes attached to it, and they're eligible to put money in, and it's a beautiful thing. So if they only made $3,000, you can put in $3,000.
That was my question.
Up to every single penny that they paid taxes on and made is eligible. They just can't go above that $6,000 number if they're under 50, $7,000 if they're over 50.
You know, I wonder how can we let our kids know how important that is? Because if you're talking about retirement and these are 16-year-olds that worked a summer job and you're saying, I'm going to contribute to your Roth, what would be a good way to let them know, believe me, you're going to be happy that this happened when you're 50 years old? You know, that's a long time for them.
It's a very long time, but you have to have that end game. And you just have to tell people the story over, you know, over the, and we talked about it, I think, in that conversation, where if you got a $10 an hour job and the first thing you did was made the house payment and the car payment and bought the groceries and went to the movies, right? And then bought a pizza and you go, oh, I don't have any money to save, right? Yet if you only made $9 an hour, you know, you may not be having as much of life today as you want, but you'll have a better life later on.
Right.
And I think it's that story. You just, you know, when Kendra got her first job, you know, my younger one, you know, I asked her how much money she was getting hourly. And I said, you need to treat it like it's this amount of money, right? You don't have to think about it like you're saving a dollar an hour. You know, think about it like you're only getting paid $9 an hour, and it will be a whole lot easier. You know, and it's interesting. They have another rule at their house, which I think is hilarious. They won't spend $5 bills. So anytime they get a $5 bill in change, it has to go into savings. So, you know, Grandpa for graduation, I guess, gave Kale a few $5 bills, which I thought was pretty cute and funny. But you just got to get into habits.
Yes, yes.
And then the funny one, I think that we talked about it and was talking about wills being such public information and whether or not you ought to use a trust. My brother was very big into, I shouldn't say was, I think he still is, into genealogy. Used to drag me to the Fort Wayne Library to go look at the census reports to try to figure out who belonged to who and where it came from. And, you know, some very interesting things that I learned up there. But when you go reading wills that were publicly traded, publicly and announced, one of the other things that comes out of that are obituaries that come out of the newspaper. Mm-hmm. And, you know, today, you know, if something happened, it'd say, you know, that he died suddenly at his home, right?
Yes.
So it doesn't say whether he had a heart attack. It doesn't say whether it was suicide. It doesn't say any of that other stuff. It just, he suddenly died in his home. Oh, no. If you go back and you read in the 1800s, early 1900s, he was found with a white sheet wrapped around his neck, dangling from the middle. I mean, it was graphic. And it's no wonder people read obituaries. You know, it was like Days of Our Lives. But it was, I mean, it was a very, very interesting way to have your life on display. So that's pretty much the summary of today's show. The big one that you want to get out of it, the synopsis, is make sure kids learn to save early and often. Compound interest is indeed amazing. Remember, when you first start out, you may not be required to pay any marginal taxes. Thus, you want Roth over tax deferral if you think you're going to make more money in the future than what you're making when you start, which we would hope so for every single one of your kids listening. They probably want to get as much money in the Roth option as they can while it's still here and while they are still eligible. You're listening to Consider This Program. I'm Joe Clark, along with Angie Kinzer. Call us 800-928-4001 or go to our website, yourlifeafterwork.com. Happy Memorial Day.